Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Good morning. I want to thank you all for being here to discuss what I think is a part of getting the job done on the legalization of marijuana. So with me today is Rebecca Towns, who is from the Legal Aid Bureau, and some of her clients, Franchelle Parker, who's the Executive Director of Open Buffalo, and one of her lead staffers, Max Anderson. So this legislation was actually a part of the Marijuana Tax and Regulation Act. In fact, it was one of the first parts of it. And it essentially reduces the penalty for possession of low-level marijuana. For under an ounce, possession would be a civilly punished by a fine of not more than $50. And under 2 ounces, possession would be a civilly punished by a fine not more than $200. It actually removes marijuana from public view or being burned as a misdemeanor. As you know, that is the reason for so many of the stop and frisk arrests, some 800,000 since 1977 in the state of New York. That is being removed. It also allows individuals in certain cases to request that their records be vacated, convictions be vacated. And the chapter amendments clarifies that. It creates a definition for expungement in criminal procedure law, which we've never actually had in the state of New York. We've had sealing, but we didn't have expungement. And it establishes a test that the Office of Court Administrators would have to identify cases to be automatically expunged and to notify the appropriate entities. These cases would include, again, marijuana possession convictions prior to establishment of the marijuana-specific crimes penal law, current crimes for unlawful possession of marijuana, of violation and possession of marijuana in the fifth degree, burning in public, and a newly established unlawful possession of marijuana violations by this law. This law will be effective 30 days after the governor signs it, which we're very hopeful that he will, since this was a three-way agreement between the Senate, Assembly, and the governor's office. And this hopefully will give these gentlemen behind me, as well as young ladies and young men across the state of New York, an opportunity for a new direction. And I say new direction because these convictions of low-level marijuana crimes actually prevented people from getting jobs because they had to say that they were convicted felons. It prevented them from getting access to Pell because Pell doesn't provide resources to people who have been convicted. It prevented them from living in public housing. And it essentially forced them into a kind of lifestyle that unfortunately created recidivism. And you know, most of the numbers of people who are incarcerated in the state of New York now, they've been there before. And so if you've been there before and you get out and you don't have a life that you're able to build, an opportunity to build a life around sustaining yourself and your family, then unfortunately you end up recidivating. Gratefully, these gentlemen are not that case, but there are many who are. And so this will help them get off that track and have an opportunity to get on a track that will allow them to lead a good quality of life. So with that, I'll have Rebecca Towns make comments, and then we'll take questions if you have them. Rebecca?
Yes, as a public defender, we know that the decriminalization that's happened some years ago in the state has not stopped the disproportionate marijuana arrests that our clients face all the time. I think somewhere around 80% of marijuana arrests that happen in the city of Buffalo have been Black or Latino folks, although rates at which whites and people of color use marijuana are roughly the same. So we have a number of clients who have been affected almost on a routine basis, and we're very excited to see this movement. I think most importantly, certainly we're very, very thrilled to see the expungement piece come in, so that as we move towards legalization in the future, folks who have been affected in the past will have those opportunities to move forward. We're very, very grateful for the Assembly Majority Leader on everything that she has done on this issue to move this forward. Our clients have faced disproportionate policing based on those arrests for way too long, and we're very hopeful moving forward that this is going to make a significant change in their lives.
This will have Francho Hart, Executive Director from Open Buffalo.
Sure. Thank you. I would like to thank the leadership of our Majority Leader, Assemblywoman Crystal People Stokes. For the last 5 years, Open Buffalo has been working to really figure out what are the issues that are creating the disproportionate racial disparities in arrest and incarceration. And after our research, we found that low-level marijuana arrests actually contribute to over 50% of the racial disparities in our community. So we're thrilled that this is the first step of a long battle, but we're excited especially about the expungement piece of the legislation, and we're happy to continue to work on the advocacy to make sure that all pieces are implemented successfully.
Gentlemen, have any questions?
Any of the young men here wanted to share their stories of Rebecca? Can they introduce any of them who would like to share?
Anybody? Let her stand right with you, so she won't get nervous. Like, where you going, Daddy?
How you doing? My name is Rashawn Pinnick. I'm just telling the story. I actually lost. Sorry about that. Can't get rid of it. I actually lost my job because of a not even 0.4 of a gram of marijuana, and that was taken to jail, and I had money on me, and this was only for under a gram of marijuana. I had money taken from me, and because I owed child support, I didn't get none of my property back, and I was in jail, and I couldn't go to work because I was in late night. I couldn't call the job because fortunately they closed overnight. So I ended up, once I got out of jail the next morning, I ended up losing my job for no call, no show. And I mean, I've been arrested a few times on not them smelling it, just, you know, happened to just see me walking down the street and frisking me, and then, okay, we got you on this, which is, you know, marijuana. And again, I'm incarcerated again. And I just, you know, I'm very happy that this law has been passed.
Okay. That means I have a new friend now. So are there any questions or?
So everyone has commented on how important the expungement piece is. Why is that particularly important? Are more of these older cases rather than newer ones?
Well, it's because New York didn't have a expungement statute on the books. So we couldn't. So in the original MARTA bill, it actually just called for sealing because it was not there. And I believe, if my understanding is right, expungement is a lot clearer and more concise. It just happens and it's gone. Sealing is a sealed, but if anybody wanted to dig deep enough, they could probably find it. If Rebecca could probably expound on it from a legal perspective a little better, but in general, I believe that expungement is better.
I mean, maybe you could touch on is there anything that I need to do if I have that on my record to make sure that it is expunged, or does it happen automatically? Can anybody address the process here?
Well, according to the law, it's the responsibility of the Office of Court Administration as well as the Department of Criminal Justice Services to pull together that data and reach out to those entities that are eligible.
Are people going to be able to afford it? A lot of the people who need to have their records expunged are from impoverished communities.
Well, there should not be an affordability issue here. There are people who work every day in the Office of Court Administration and Department of Criminal Justice Services. They can do the research, they can search out the data, and they can expunge the records. So there's no need to hire an attorney to to do that.
But it sounded like there's some sort of written process you have to do if you want all your records actually destroyed.
Well, when somebody reaches you, they'll have to communicate with you to work through that process. But that doesn't mean that you need to hire an attorney to do it.
So the Office of Court Administration is going to reach out to 800,000 different recipients of 800,000 different cases like this?
All 800,000 of them may or may not be eligible. I think that number may be more like 100,000 when you boil it down. One, because it's been going on since 1977, so some of these people may not even be still on earth. And two, because sometimes there are people who have criminal records that are attached to some other things that would not make them eligible.
But that sounds like the merits, you made a good case for the merits, but that sounds like a heck of a job that they've never done before with the Office of Court Administration.
Well, I would say they should use their computers and get somebody to figure out how to collect the data, get it in one place, and figure out a way to communicate. They'll have time to do it. This will become legal 30 days after the governor signs it. So today is what, the 23rd? If he signs it by the end of July, they'll have time over the course of the summer to figure out how to do it. Keep in mind that most of the people who work in the Office of Court Administrations as well as DCJS, these are professional people. It's not going to take them long to figure out how to create a data system that goes through the criminal justice. They have all the records already. It's not going to take them that long to figure that out. And quite frankly, if they are in need of help, some of us are willing to do it. Also, the law requires that they establish an education information process so that they can put information out to let people know, if you were convicted of something like this between this time and that time, contact this number, which could make it a little bit more speedier.
Is there a deadline associated with this?
There's no deadline.
There are a lot of people who asked questions to us about what decriminalization actually means. A lot of people thought marijuana was already decriminalized in New York State. And it was interesting to hear from this gentleman that said that you actually were incarcerated for a short time because of marijuana, because a lot of people didn't believe that still existed. How important was that component of saying people are not going to be held as a result of marijuana?
I think that's critically important because you're right. In 1977, New York did decriminalize. The problem was if there was a technical glitch that said if it's in public view, it's illegal. If it's you're smoking it outside, it's illegal. Well, a lot of people may have it in their pockets. This is what this whole stop and frisk was about, forcing people to empty their pockets. Now it's in public view and you could be arrested. That has been removed.
To piggyback off Ryan, leading up to this, obviously, we've talked a lot with the Buffalo Police Department about how they handle this. And they've said that for at least the past year or so, they have not pursued low-level marijuana offenses. If that's true, how does this change anything locally from the past year to now?
If that's true, I hope it's true because, you know, they kind of sort of shouldn't, because if you think about it, the vast majority of people who smoke marijuana, they don't look like these gentlemen standing behind me. In fact, they don't even live in the same communities. So if you're not enforcing the rules in one community, you should not be forcing them in the other. But fact of the matter is, they were, and maybe they have slowed down, but this law will prevent that from doing it.
And also, Ms. People Stokes, you were one of the earliest local leaders who was a proponent of legalizing recreational marijuana. This is kind of the compromise bill. Does this fall short of what you wanted?
I kind of differ with you. It's not a compromise. As a matter of fact, it was a huge piece of legalizing marijuana. Did not want to legalize a product and put it into the market when there were people who still had records. So this is an important piece of it. And, you know, I've been around in government for a while. I understand that sometimes that the really getting things done is compromise. And so I was not really willing to compromise to the extent that we would put a market, put a product into the market that would not have the accessibility for our people to benefit from it. So I'm grateful for this part that we do have.
Do you think that law enforcement concerns were the chief reason that adult use legalization didn't happen this year?
Not at all.
What were the chief reasons?
I think it's people's personal opinions. They were not speaking for the constituents that they represent. They were speaking for themselves and how they feel about a drug that's been, I would say, not only criminalized, but almost villainized for the last 30 years. And there's lack of understanding. Hopefully their voters will speak to them.
Given that you, your leadership in the Assembly, leadership in the Senate, the governor are all on board with adult legalization, and couldn't get it done through the budget process, couldn't get it done through the legislative process, why should we believe that going forward this way will be done?
You should believe it's going forward, it's going to happen, because quite frankly, it's happening all around us. And either we'll be standing alone as a lone state that doesn't allow the adult use of marijuana, or we'll join the rest of the United States. There's a lot of people who think that, you know, New York State is so progressive, and in a lot of ways, New York is not as progressive as it thinks. It's only progressive as the people who is willing to elect to speak for it. And right now, there are a number of people who are elected, particularly in Long Island, who are not progressive. And they are not I shouldn't say they're not progressive, but they're not progressive on this topic. And until we educate, inform, and grow their perspective, we won't move forward. But one thing I do want to mention, while I put the baby down, is that article in today's newspaper about the dispensary that's just in Niagara Falls, and who the people are that are going there. The owner of the business says she's happy we didn't legalize. It helps her business. That's, you know, even though you can't go over there, buy it, and bring it back where you're not supposed to. But I assure you, the people who are going over there, buy it, and bring it back, don't look like these brothers standing behind me. The second thing I would mention is that Massachusetts, as soon as you cross the line from New York to Massachusetts, the cars that are lined up, New York. The people who are in line, New York. And so at some point, it's not going to be about if we're going to do this, it's going to be about when we're going to do it. And I hope it's sooner than later.
Why do you think Long Island Democratic state senators in an election year would be more interested in changing their position on this when they're not willing to do this in a non-election?
Well, because 57% of New Yorkers would like to see it happen. And if you crunch that number down to, say, millennials from 18 to 35, that number is more like 70%. So if those people speak during an election year, they're going to have to be heard.
Does that translate into their districts? I really appreciate your
yes.
statewide.
Yes, it absolutely does.
Are we certain about that?
It does.
So you think this is a sure thing?
I think it's a sure thing that's going to happen. I'm not going to say when, because quite frankly, it should have already happened, but I think it's a sure thing. I do.
Do you think that having the decriminalization part, 22110, and then also having expungement, that's kind of taken care of? Do you think maybe the next time you try, it'll be easier because of that?
No, I think we'll have an added
or is it harder?
Added member of our coalition, quite frankly. And I say that because the same thing that the woman who owns the dispensary in Canada thought, you know, you're helping my business. This is a huge market. In the state of New York, people have said that it's a $2 billion industry underground. So there are a lot of people who would love to see that above ground. So I think we'll have new coalition members to help us work through this the next time. So no, I don't think that this stops at all.
Have you had any conversations with Flora Buffalo? They were talking about 500 to 1,000 jobs, tens of millions of dollars in investment. Does that go away right now because this wasn't legalized this session?
Well, in a way, their strategy included the legalization of adult use. But their project, in my estimation, doesn't have to go away because there's opportunities for them to apply for a medical marijuana license and grow the plant, or hemp license and grow the plant. So the strategy of their plan, I think, could still be made whole. It just will not have the component of adult use in it.
Have they indicated at all to you that they
are? Well, they haven't indicated that they would, but I certainly did suggest it. I would love to see those 500 jobs in Buffalo, and if it goes down to 400 because we don't have adult use, it's still all good.
Thank you.
Your
name?
I'm sorry, I didn't.
Rashawn Pinnock.
Do you mind if I'm on the mic?
Rashawn Pennick, R-A-S-H-A-W-N-P-E-N-N-I-C-K.
Is this your daughter?
Yes.
What's her name?
Yes, Jaden Pennick. Say hi.
J-A-D-E-N.
J-A-D-E-N, yes.
And how old is she?
Three.
And all of you guys have run-ins with the law?
Yes, I just recently had
You just had one recently.
The day before yesterday, I got caught with 6 grams of marijuana, and I'm still going through court with it.
They just
about to go to my friend's mom.
Okay.
Yes, I got caught the day before yesterday with 6 grams of marijuana. I'm still going through court. We were supposed to go to my friend's. I was in BMHA Public House in Park, Public Park, and they had no call on me or anything. He just walked up to me and said he wasn't supposed to be down here, searched me, and found 6 grams of marijuana, took me to jail.
Your name is, I'm sorry?
Antonio Jones. Yeah.
Is that over the one? I'm so sorry. Is that over the 100,000?
Well, that is. But what he said is they searched him.
Okay. Yeah.
If they had not searched him, they wouldn't have found it.
Right.
And you were just walking. You went in a car.
I was sitting in a park with my friend, and we was about to go to my friend's memorial. And they just walked up and just searched me with, like, no call, no probable cause, anything.
And 6 grams should have been, it's a violation level. Anything under 25 grams has, for a very long time, been just a violation. So, you know, why he'd end up in jail behind that is another question, too.
And you spent the night in jail?
Yes.
So was it, can I ask you, was it 221.5?
It was, they got me with possession of marijuana, trespassing, and loitering. But yet I'm in a public park, so it's like...
In a car?
No, I'm just sitting at the park under. Yeah.
Can you talk about how that made you feel?
It made me feel like I wasn't a person as much because it's like I'm not doing anything wrong. I'm just, you know, sitting here with my friends, and then a cop just come up to me, tell me, come here to the car, search me, and it takes me to jail.
Under the label I was written, 6 grams, you would need to have it out or smoking it in public, right? Just spend the night in jail.
Right. It was in my book bag, and you know.
So did they say that it was out in public?
Or, no.
Or did you cut a knife or something? One of the other charges.
No, just possession of marijuana.
Can you talk to how that happens?
Well, they very well may have justified the overnight stay with the other charges too. But we do see a lot of trespass charges in public housing. We're seeing fewer and fewer. One of the problems with that, however, is that the statute for trespassing in public housing applies inside a building. Not when you're sitting on a park bench outside, not when you're playing basketball with your friends, like's happened with Rashawn a number of times. And so this was very likely, I haven't seen the papers, where, you know, it's still being litigated, but it sounds from face value like it was an illegal arrest, and he never should have been in custody for either of those charges, quite frankly.
Yes, housing.
Housing.
Yes.
Was that the case for you too?
Yes, housing, yes.
When was that?
I'm not too sure. I had so many run-ins with housing, I can't pinpoint that exact route.
When someone is in custody for a night or sometimes longer, is the damage sometimes already done, even if the charge is ultimately dropped as they go through the court system?
Absolutely. I mean, just imagine if you were suddenly spirited away from your life for a couple hours or 24 hours. You can't call your work. You can't move your car from one side of the street to another. It might get towed away and impounded. You can't pick your children up from school or daycare, and suddenly CPS is being called. I mean, 24 hours taken away from the rest of your life, held in custody without any way to contact your loved ones, whatever medical issues you have, your diabetes medicine that you have to wait an extra 48 hours to get back to. I mean, it's, you know, there's any number of issues can really unravel in your life, even with a very short custodial stay.
And can you spell your name?
My name is Antonio Jones, A-N-T-O-N-I-O, last name J-O-N-E-S.
And how old are you?
I'm 19.
Rebecca Town, R-E-B-E-C-C-A-T-O-W-N.
So I guess,
thank you.
Is there any confidence that this new law will keep people from having overnight stays? This gentleman technically wasn't breaking that law that should have put him in custody for a night. They got him on a different charge, it sounded like, right?
Well, this law,
that's not going to keep happening.
What this law does is it takes away that stop and frisk. Like, you can't ask somebody to empty their pockets, see what they have, and now decide that I want to arrest you. That's out. You can't do that anymore. And if they do find it on you, they could charge you with something, but it would be a violation. You wouldn't go to jail for it.
They write them a ticket.
Say that again?
They write them a ticket.
They essentially write them a ticket.
You still get arrested, though.
No. Mm-hmm. You get a citation.
But you're taking the central booking.
You probably could... You probably could write you a ticket on the spot, and then you would owe money. If you didn't pay it, then there would be some conversation after that.
Rashawn, what were you employed doing at the time?
I was at Tops on Broadway and Bailey.
Okay. You're working at the store?
Yes.
You been able to get back there?
No.
Did you have a job now?
No.
And when did that original arrest happen? When you lost your job.
Rebecca
may remember when the arrest.
That I'm not sure. Was it 2014, maybe 2000?
No, it's
happened 2017. I think 2017. And I can maybe clarify a little. Previously, with a marijuana violation, your first charge with a violation would be subject to a delayed dismissal. After that, you're looking at a fine, but three times and you might get up to 15 days in custody. And so often the police would say, well, until we run a fingerprint analysis and we see what the criminal history is, this could be a custodial situation. This could be something that's subject to time in jail. By removing that and saying, no matter how many times you've been arrested now, a $50 fine is the maximum sentence. There's no longer the incentive or the excuse to take somebody down to the basement of City Court building, fingerprint them, and run their, or if they don't have an ID, to say, well, you know what, you could end up doing jail because maybe you've had five arrests before, so we're going to put you in jail overnight. Let a judge sort it out in the morning. That's been a major excuse for a lot of the custodial situations we've seen, and we're very hopeful that with this new change in the legislation, we're not going to see that anymore.
So in terms of violations, it doesn't matter how many times either.
My understanding is that it no longer matters. It did before, and so it was a major excuse, but it's I think that's changed now.
Okay.
Not only that, it's hard to say that it's, that you have to put a time limit on how many times you can use it. What everybody else in the state does, you can go into Fill-Rite and buy a product that has CBD oil, which is a component of marijuana. So, to say that we can find all these reasons why we should incarcerate people for a violation is really just not even fair, but at least we got this law in place to begin to, bring some of that down. Now, does this law gonna fix racism and the racist agenda that happens in some communities? It's not gonna fix that. People will find a way to get around that. But at the same time, I think our community can begin educating our young men to understand this, that racism is still here, but now you do have a chance for a clean slate, and I hope that people will take advantage of it.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.